Rangers, pressured by Zajac Barzal, able to pull it out, throws it over. Ryan Pollock steps in. He scores! Ryan Pollock, what a time for his first of the season!
Islanders country, hello. This is PT Isles, the Running with the Devils edition. Alongside Noel Fogelman, I'm Joe Bono. A reminder, you can listen to this show and all Lighthouse Hockey podcasts on iTunes. Please rate and review, or find us on Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or over at lighthousehockey.com. Lighthouse Hockey, your SB Nation home for your New York Islanders coverage. Tonight, we are joined by Islanders beat reporter for The Athletic and the host of the No Sleep Till Brooklyn podcast. That, of course, is Arthur Staple, and he joins us now. No Sleep Till Belmont, not Brooklyn. How you doing, Art?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
So how was your chat with Michael Grabner earlier today?
Great. I've always enjoyed dealing with Michael. You know, his time with the Islanders was, he came out with a bang back 10 years ago, which is amazing. I think it's 10 years ago now. And it's too bad that he kind of missed their little renaissance there. You know, he was hurt most of that 14-15 year, and then he left in a trade before 15-16, but I think he's the only player in NHL history with two 20-goal seasons for the Islanders and Rangers. So that's, you know, the fact that he was able to kind of resurrect his career with the Rangers, I'm sure Islander fans weren't happy about it, but I still, like I said on the podcast, there's the fact that he was able to resurrect his career with the Rangers, the Islanders fans hate, but they still loved Grabs, even though he was succeeding for the Rangers, just shows how much everybody really liked him when he was on the island.
And it's pretty funny because, like, when he got traded to Toronto, there's still two players from that deal still playing in the league. Of course, now with the Islanders, Christopher Gibson is backing up in St. Louis now, right? And of course, Carter Verhaeghe, which kills me every time I see him score a goal. Unfortunately, he just got hurt because, you know, I followed him when I was covering Bridgeport. You know, a good guy. Just they just gave up on him way too quickly. And for a backup AHL goalie who now I think is playing in the Swedish league, maybe.
Yeah, that's an interesting trade tree for Grabner, but, you know, I think it wasn't a great trade, but I think it was probably the right time for him to move on just because the injury had kind of slowed him down a little bit, and that, you know, that was such so essential part of his game. But it was nice to see him resurrected and even have a couple of good years with Arizona. He had a really good playoff last year, and, you know, I don't think he's ready to give it up yet, so maybe we'll see, you know, what happens next season. He, you know, could still be an Islander. Lou Lamoriello loves his guys, so you never know.
Not too many players can say they were traded in 5-for-1 deals either. So that is definitely a feather in the cap. Art, of course, the big news this past week, the Islanders get their man and Kyle Palmieri, Travis Zajac, of course, in the deal as well. I went back to your article back in mid-March when you wrote about the top, you know, 25 trade targets for the Islanders, and of course, Palmieri was part of that collection, really the second name you mentioned outside of Taylor Hall. And what I'm curious about is, you said Palmieri likely would not cost a first round pick. Now, obviously the Islanders ended up trading that first round pick and a fourth for him and Zajac. If it was just Palmieri, do you think a second rounder would have done it?
I don't know if the Devils would have taken that, but I think that's probably what the offer was. And I think maybe there wasn't even an offer just for Palmieri. I imagine, you know, just hearing from some of the national guys and sort of seeing the way the timeline went, it really seemed like the clincher for this deal was Zajac agreeing to waive his no trade clause sometime on Wednesday. And it would, maybe that made it clear that it was either both guys or neither. And the Islanders would have gone with Taylor Hall if it was just a one player coming in kind of situation. Which sort of leads me to believe that the trade with Buffalo would have been similar to what the Bruins gave up for him, also not a first round pick. So if the Devils were stuck on a first round pick, let's say, and Lou says, well, we need to have Travis Zajac in the deal or you don't have a deal, then maybe that sort of explains the back and forth that he had with Buffalo and Jersey. You know, I think there's probably some fans out there that if that were the case, that they needed Travis Zajac, who may, you know, in a perfect world, not even really be a guy who fits perfectly in the Islanders lineup right now. If that was the thing that pushed over the top and, you know, just was the decision that Lou made to give up a first, I don't know if a lot of fans would be thrilled with that. But I think you've seen through, at least certainly on Sunday, that these are two guys that sort of fit what they do a little bit better maybe than Taylor Hall. Hall probably would have been a guy that they would have gotten to fill a spot, but also look for a Zajac style player then in addition to help fill out a more depth forward spot. But I think for the cost, you get two guys that Lou knows very well that are Barry Trotz style guys. You know, I think in this, and especially in this kind of year where you're looking at a first round pick that's probably in the 20s somewhere. Nobody's even really sure if there's more than a dozen really bona fide good first round picks because the amateur kids have played so little this year. And then I think you just factor in the Lou Lamoriello factor, which is he's ready to give up a first round pick if he thinks his team can win a Stanley Cup. And I think that's the way he was looking at it, that they are a legit Stanley Cup contender as is. And if they add these two guys, they're even better. So I think it was probably an easy decision for Lou to make.
Now, you kind of surprised of like where Zajac and Palmieri are playing on like each line. Zajac now on the first line, which I mean, I think it makes sense. It takes the faceoffs away from Matt Barzal, who traditionally is not very good. Kind of gives a little bit of Komarov role, a little bit of an instigator. I think a smarter player than Leo Komarov at times. Not going to take a bad penalty with a couple minutes left in the third. But and then Palmieri, you know, fitting nicely in with, you know, Paggio and Wahlstrom. Were you kind of surprised about where they are in the lineup?
A little bit. You know, I think you get some hints from what Barry says. And I think, you know, in talking to him before this deal was made, that why he liked Komarov there was, you know, you can't have light guys on a line. And, you know, it's not an insult to say that Barzal and Eberle are not the most physical guys, but you need some heft on every line, some sort of solid play. A solidly built guy who's not going to shy away from the physical stuff. And obviously that's what Leo brings. Like you said, sometimes a little overzealous with it, but he certainly fits that mold. And even Anders Lee, obviously with some skill, fits that mold. And I think of Palmieri and Zajac, perhaps Zajac is a little bit better suited to that. I'm not completely sure, but I think the key factor, like you said, is he can take some faceoffs and kind of get Barzal moving a little bit faster off draws maybe. And just having a guy who maybe plays a bit simpler of a style, just, you know, I think the key for Barry Trotz, as you've seen over the 3 years that he's been here, is it's not necessarily three guys on a line that he needs to have together. It's two guys at the very least. And I think the way that Barzal and Eberle have played together this year makes him feel like, not that you could throw anybody there, but if you throw someone who's maybe not as skilled, but at least is plays such a straightforward style, then that's good enough. And as you said, you know, I think the best line for them in that game on Sunday against the Rangers was the Palmieri, Pageau, Wahlstrom line. And if you've got that line going real well and you've got your two kind of legacy lines, the Nelson line and the Cizikas line, playing well enough and doing what they do, you're kind of spreading the wealth around a little bit. And I think that's what they're looking for, to not be so top heavy and not be so focused on making sure that Barzal has the best possible line mate.
Arthur, what do you make about the team's recent play? And they're finding ways to win, but I feel like you go through these games, especially the second periods of games, right? No matter what the lead is, they tend to give it up in the second period. They've really struggled there. And of course, how good they've been in the third periods of games this season. So it really just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But, you know, these back-to-back games against the Rangers lose 4-1. And, you know, Rangers were the better team for parts of the game on Sunday. The game against the Flyers, where they end up winning in a shootout, similar. I mean, where do you feel like they are right now? They're finding ways to win. They're collecting a lot of points to stay right in there, step with step with Washington, but really haven't seen their best hockey in four or five games, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first, you know, the Thursday Friday games were pretty poor by their standards. You know, you got a team like Philly that just doesn't seem to be able to get over the hump against the Islanders or any good teams lately. So, you know, I think that they've put themselves in a position where they need points. You know, wins are nice. Style points are kind of out the window now. It's all about maintaining the pace with Washington, with Pittsburgh, whether Boston creeps up there or not. But it sort of seems like there's four teams that are headed for the four playoff spots, and where you finish, you know, I'm sure they'd love to get home ice, being, you know, seeing as good as they've been at home, and the prospect maybe in a month or so of having more fans there would make it even more appealing to start a series there. But I think ultimately, at this point, they banked so many points that the goal is just to get in and you know, find a good rhythm with some of the with the new guys and make sure you're healthy, get some work for both their goalies. You know, it's I wouldn't say that they're coasting by any means, but the push for the playoffs, I think, is kind of they've accomplished that in a meaningful way. I mean, I think you look at any data person on Twitter who covers hockey, it's they're in the high 90th percentile for playoff chances, and they've been there for a little while. So I think this team is, if they haven't locked up a playoff spot, but they're just about there with only 14 games left. And I think now is really about jockeying for position and making sure that you're at the best possible situation with your roster going into the playoffs and, you know, grinding away and making sure you're on top of your game for 60 minutes, night after night after night is not quite where they want to be right now. You know, I think they've learned over these last couple of years, you want to be at your best and at your healthiest going into the playoffs, because that's really where it counts.
So staying with that, the other acquisition, of course, for a seventh rounder, Islanders acquiring Braden Coburn from Ottawa. And there's been a real reluctance to really not, you know, change up the top six defensemen when all are available and healthy throughout this year. And Noel and I have talked about this throughout the season, where we thought there might've been a couple spots here and there. Do you give Andy Green a rest? Do you give, you know, do you take Mayfield out of the lineup and let Hickey play or let Aho play a game and just kind of keep everyone fresh? But they've not gone that route. Do you see, as you know, with 14 games left, do you feel like maybe we see a bit of a deeper rotation at the blue line heading down the final couple weeks of the season?
It wouldn't surprise me to see Coburn get a game or two just to get him acclimated. I don't think you want him to his first appearance in an Islander uniform to be, you know, a game seven of a playoff series where he's just been taxi squad or black aces type situation. He's certainly a veteran enough guy that I don't think it's going to be too much of a shock to him, but I think you do want to get him in at least to a game or two. But yeah, I agree with you guys. You know, the fact that they were one of the last team, I think, to play just six guys on D seemed like they were playing with fire for a long, long time. And obviously the Dobson COVID situation changed all that. But if there was a guy that they would have voluntarily taken out of the lineup, you know, knowing Barry Trotz's track record, it probably would have been Dobson, just because his young guy, you know, the way that he looks at some of his less experienced guys, he doesn't really feel like they have to be playing night after night. So I'm with you. You know, I think Andy Green has held up pretty well. You know, he's had a very capable season considering he's played every game. Would they think about resting him on a back-to-back or one of the, you know, they've got another 3 and 4 coming this weekend. I don't know if it'll happen just yet, but at some point, yeah, I could see that. If guys are banged up and playing through things, you could certainly see someone getting a game or two. And I really feel like with the way that Thomas Hickey played in his five games, that gave them a little bit of confidence. You know, obviously they didn't feel like it was enough depth, and you can never have too much given that they lost two of their top six defensemen in the playoffs during the playoff run last year. But yeah, I could see Coburn getting a couple of games just to sort of ease him into what the Islanders do and making him familiar with it. But yeah, these six are the six you're going to see until somebody drops, and knock wood, hopefully that doesn't happen.
Just with, you know, the other acquisitions in the East, the Islanders obviously weren't alone. You know, the top four playoff teams all made big deals, especially the Capitals at the last moment getting Anthony Mantha, which kind of a very curious deal to give up on, you know, Jacob Verano, who is a really good young player. Maybe he needed a change of scenery. Give up first, a second. I mean, he gave up a lot. Richard Panik, I guess, was pretty much a salary dump. That's probably why they had to get rid of a second round pick. But which team, I guess, besides the Islanders, do you think made the biggest moves?
Yeah, I mean, I like what Washington did. You know, I think Verana has been a guy that's kind of confounded a couple of coaches now there. I don't think Barry Trotz was a huge fan of his, just from a consistency factor. And I think if you know, the Caps had a few guys who didn't really show up that well in the playoffs last year, and he was definitely one of them. And I think the inconsistency really, you know, made them feel like if they could upgrade one of their top nine guys, they were going to do it. And they were going to get a very solid guy, solid player, solidly built guy in Mantha. You know, they are a they're a big, heavy, talented team now in their top nine. And it's just another guy that's going to be hard to handle. They already had a few guys like that. So I like what they did. You know, even a Michael Roffel, who always seems to come through with something against the Islanders over the last couple of years, is a good guy on the fourth line. And I think they're, you know, their fourth line is not one to be messed with, you know, Hagelin and Dowd and Hathaway and now Roffel in that mix. They're pretty deep up front, maybe the deepest team group of forwards of any of the four teams that are in the playoffs. You know, Pittsburgh, I think Jeff Carter, they really seem to just plug and play guys, whether it's trade or call up. It's amazing. And I don't think Mike Sullivan gets enough credit for being able to incorporate some guys that nobody's ever heard of before to fit in that Pittsburgh system. And with Boston, you know, I feel like they did get Taylor Hall, but their concerns really seem to be in net and on D, where they've really been decimated. So I don't know how much of a threat they are, but I think the Islanders really, you know, if they weren't really, they kind of let off the arms race there in the East. And I think their move was pretty bold and kind of and very decisive about what they wanted to do and how they wanted to fill the holes on their forward group. And, you know, I think it shows how, I think what the other teams think of the Islanders, that they felt the need to get better and try to improve in lockstep with the Islanders. And I think it shows also that the Islanders might still be one of the, you know, if they're not the favorite, it's, they may be co-favorites with the Capitals to get out of that division.
The Athletic's Arthur Staple is our guest. Of course, you can listen to him as well on the No Sleep Till Belmont podcast, often with AJ Malesko. You know, you look at the division and where the Islanders may separate themselves, you know, goaltending and defense, and the goaltending, you know, once again, is what this team's bread and butter has been now for three straight years, and a different cast of characters each time, right? Leonard and Greiss, Greiss and Varlamov, now Varlamov and Sorokin. And, you know, after those first couple shaky starts, Sorokin has really just been as advertised. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, you know, are you at all surprised, even given the hype around him and him coming over to North America, as to how quickly he settled in here, and whether or not you attribute that to just himself and maybe the relationship with Varlamov being there as a mentor, or just, of course, Piero Greco and Mitch Korn and what the Islanders do?
You know, I think a lot of it is Sorokin himself. You know, it's easy to, you know, kind of the out of sight, out of mind feeling, but this is a guy who has, you know, been one of the two or three best goalies in the world that wasn't in the NHL for a lot of years. You know, he was playing at a real high level in Russia, and it's a very different league. There's not a ton of scoring there. It's, you know, it's kind of, you think back to some of the old Islander days in the 2000s when they had you know, guys leading their team with 40 or 50 points. That's a good year in the KHL these days. So it's a very goalie and defense driven league. And but he consistently, with the goals against under two, his save percentage was always in the 920s, 930s. And this is, you know, he's obviously was on one of the stronger teams, but just the consistency year in and year out for him really showed, I think, that he was ready to make this move. And, you know, such a weird time for him to do it. And all those months of being on the island, but not being able to play, whether it was in the bubble or then in the weird fall off season, you know, the fact that he was, like you said, was able to kind of pull it together after a couple of shaky starts. And I still think you see him adapting each game. I feel like there was a stretch where he was winning games, but he was still maybe giving up a goal that you'd be surprised to see an elite goalie give up. So he's still adapting to the heavy traffic in front of the net and angles. And you do some kind of see him sometimes slide a little too far off his angle, but he's a very, very acrobatic, flexible goalie. And yeah, it's, you know, I don't think there's a ton of surprise to see him playing this well, but also it certainly was the right team and the right environment with the goalie department that they have that, like you said, has been kind of churning out success year after year in year three here, and a coach and a team that really, I think, you know, you think about that stretch where he started to get on a roll and when eight or nine in a row, he wasn't facing more than 27 or 28 shots a night. And that's a testament to his teammates, who kind of took it upon themselves to say, we need to make this guy feel a little more comfortable here and not let him face a barrage or see things that he hasn't seen before. So it's definitely been a group effort led by him. And yeah, it's, you know, it certainly is exciting for now and exciting to think about in the playoffs, which way they'll go. I assume it'll still be Varlamov in game one of the playoffs, but who knows if it'll finish that way. And then even to think about with the expansion draft in the offseason, whether, you know, Lamoriello decides to be bold and try to save some money on the salary cap and make Ilya Sorokin his number one and then go hunting for another goalie, because he's certainly done that before after good years with swapping Leonard for Varlamov a couple of years ago. So maybe he'll feel like doing it again. It creates a pretty good problem to have with how good Sorokin's been.
I'm going to go back to the deadline for a second. Hypothetical, had Anders Lee been healthy, what kind of deal do you think Giannis would have made?
I don't think they would have been able to just get Travis Zajac, but I think you would have been looking at something more along those lines, you know, a bottom six utility type player to kind of fill in and create that depth. You know, probably would have still done the same thing with Coburn. Maybe they would have felt like they had a little bit more wiggle room to add somebody who could have played a little bit more on D. But really, if you take away, if you have Lee in the lineup and you take away that $7 million cap hit that's on LTIR, they really were tight against it. So there would have had to be a lot of juggling even just to add one contract, much less two. So, you know, I think it would have been minimal. And I think they would have felt like, you know, and Lou, I think, said it himself that it changed their thinking, the Lee injury, that they probably would have been thinking about something very different, but here they were, and you know, kudos to him for stepping up and saying we're not going to be deterred by an injury to one of our most important players. And I think that's a very new feeling for Islander fans in the last 20 or 30 years, to have a general manager and an organization, you know, ownership level, to say we're still going to go for it no matter what.
I heard you earlier today on the other Lighthouse Hockey podcast with Dan and Mike, and you guys were talking about Travis Zajac. Well, Mike was saying he's already in love with both Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. He wants to go out and buy the jerseys and make sure that they're Islanders for the rest of their lives. But he was saying about, you know, whether or not either one of them could be in the fold for next year. And you guys were mentioning Zajac, and you know, you brought up the fact around Casey Cizikas and his pending free agency. And I really think that's going to be quite fascinating, because I think production wise, he might be able to do better somewhere else, yet his identity on the identity line and with this team is just so strong. I mean, I know we're a few months away, but it would be strange to see him in another uniform.
It would. And I wonder if he feels that way, if we're going to see, you know, he's obviously not in the same stage of his career and same effectiveness level as Matt Martin, but if he's very determined to stay, I think we're going to see a similar scenario where he agrees to a deal very quickly, but we don't hear about it till much closer to training camp, so the Islanders can sort out their cap issues with their RFAs and the expansion draft and all that other stuff. But it will be fascinating. You know, he's 30 years old. He's coming off a very good contract, one that was probably an overpay at the time that he signed it, but now seems about right for a guy that does what he does. Can he match it? Can he do better? Could it be a four times four kind of guy? If he hits the open market, you have to believe there's going to be a lot of suitors. And I think a lot of that also will depend on what happens to some teams in the playoffs. I think you could see his hometown Leafs, if they stumble again and they feel like they need somebody who's plays a very straightforward style with all of their skill players, you could see them making a big pitch if they can move some money around, which they've certainly been able to do over the years. There's a lot of teams out there that could use a guy like Casey Cizikas. So it is going to be incumbent upon Lou Lamoriello, and I'm sure it's been going on now since you're allowed to sign guys who are pending free agents. And maybe that conversation has already been asked and answered with Cizikas' agent, who happens to also be Matt Martin's agent and Cal Clutterbuck's agent, which makes a nice little kind of puts a nice little bow on that fourth line that they all have the same agent. But yeah, you know, it is going to be interesting. And I think, it's not something that's going to be, if they can resolve it right away, we're not going to hear about it right away. So it's going to be some anxious moments, I think, for Islander fans, depending on what we see with Casey Cizikas. And I think there's also the factor of, you hate to bring it up in any sort of jinx kind of way, but if he gets hurt again, it's going to be, you know, 3 or 4 years in a row with an injury. And if he misses some significant time in the playoffs, it's going to be fair to wonder if Lamoriello believes he can stay healthy now into, you know, his being beyond age 30. And, you know, you'd think that they still have a lot of time for Casey Zizekas at the right price, but whether he agrees that the right price is the right price for him, we'll have to see.
I don't think the Leafs would try to get Casey released another 10 years. He's way too young right now for them. But another guy, because I'm basically all in for the season. I really don't want to. I don't care about draft picks. I don't care about the fantasy draft. You know, anything. But since it's on the subject, Anthony Beauvillier is going to be RFA after the season. Do you think he'd be kind of the odd man out, similar to like Devontae's last offseason?
You know, I think if you look at the three RFAs they have, you know, it's no, he's still an important guy, but he's not as important as Sorokin, and he's not as important as Adam Pellick to what they do. And so, yeah, I could see a scenario, depending on what happens in the expansion draft, you know, whether they decide that they need to make a trade to get some, you know, Seattle to take a certain player off their hands. I think a lot is riding on what happens around that expansion draft and who either gets picked or who they arrange to get picked and give up an asset to facilitate that. But yeah, it could be another scenario. You know, Beauvillier's coming off a bridge deal. He's due a big raise. He's obviously not having the kind of season between the injury early on and you know, a little bit lower production, but he's a guy who can get hot at any time. And he certainly showed in the playoffs last year, if he can put together another playoff run like he had last season, you know, you're talking about a $4.5-5 million a year guy, especially if you're buying up years of his unrestricted free agency. So, yeah, it could be a bite the bullet. We got to trade him to get some assets back and just kind of ease the cap crunch. And like I said, of those three guys, he's probably the one that would be the most likely to go and would certainly have a lot of appeal around the league. He's, you know, he's a dynamic player. He's a 20 goal scorer. He's a guy who on another team that's a little bit more offense minded could be easily be a 30 goal scorer and play a lot of different roles. So yeah, it's going to be a difficult scenario. You know, you don't want to think, like you said, you don't want to think too far ahead. This is a good team. They've got as good a chance as anybody to make it out of this division. And maybe they're even the favorites to make it out of this division. And then once you get to the semifinals, you don't know who's going to be there. So this is a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And you don't want to start wringing your hands about what's going to happen a few months down the road. But you do have to have it in the back of your mind. And I think Beauvillier is probably a guy that once the season really does end is a guy who you're going to wonder if he's going to be an Islander in the future.
I don't think there's a certain – I don't think some members of the fan base, the younger generation, is ready for the emotional toll of an expansion draft. I mean, Grabowski getting, you know, traded, you know, or selected with Vegas, that was different. That there was no emotional ties there at that point, given his current status. I remember being, you know, 12 years old in 93 and Glenn waking up and Glenn Healy's on the Mighty Ducks. So, you know, I think this is going to be quite a,
Panthers,
yeah, he lost both goaltenders and Ron Hextall came on. So there's gonna be a bit of a rude awakening there to maybe see, you know, an actual contributing player from this team, especially if the team goes deep into the playoffs and is a memorable team ending up in a Seattle jersey next season. I guess last question for me, Arthur, is just, you know, Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz, we're now 3 years into this and you still get a lot of it on Twitter because we all see it. The doubt that creeps in at the smallest, you know, line decision or, roster maneuver and people moving to the taxi squad. What's it been like covering the Islanders within this 3 year period where, you know, the brain trust as so well respected and their track record is so good and fans are now getting upset and annoyed over the minutia out there compared to, you know, the issues that the team had, you know, not too long ago.
I mean, I'd worry more if I didn't hear from some Islanders, some fans on Twitter that about some of the small issues, because that's just the nature of being a fan. And it does happen in other fan bases. Certainly one of the more enjoyable parts about being at the Athletic is being teammates now with people that I used to see around covering beats. And now we're all sort of in the same boat. And I think it's fun to swap stories about nervous Penguins fans, nervous Hawks fans, whoever it is, you know, whatever sort of track record of success the team has, there's always going to be a segment of the fan base, and they are all on Twitter because it's a good place to vent, that they're going to vent about whatever small thing is bothering them. And, you know, having said that, it is, you know, from a, you know, the big picture view, it, you know, just drastically different. And it's different in a lot of ways. You know, it's a much more buttoned down organization now, which doesn't always make for the best beat writing, because you're not as close to the players. And certainly in the last year plus, there's no way to be close to the players in a pandemic. And a Lou Lamoriello run team is built for pandemic life. It's, you know, they're very insulated and removed, I think, from a lot of the media stuff. And, you know, where a few years ago when things were going poorly or whatever, you'd get, you know, people reaching out from the organization to kind of ask questions about what the perception is of X or what's going on with Y. There's none of that now. It's very tight-lipped, and that's, you know, there's nothing surprising about that. Lou's been doing that for three decades now. But just being around the day-to-day part of it, it's very, very different. And I think just the success part of it is a lot different for so many fans. Like you said, you know, you remember the 93 expansion draft. Anybody who was a fan in the 90s has gone through a few ups and downs, but it's mostly been pretty steady, awful news for the, you know, for about a 25 year stretch. And even the brief, you know, ray of sunshine from, you know, 2015 and 2016 was quickly replaced by disappointment and upheaval. So this is the most consistently good stretch this team has had for, you know, going, you know, 35 years really. And it's, you know, that removes a big chunk of the fan base that doesn't go all the way back to the dynasty era. And that's different. And I think it takes a lot of getting used to. And, you know, to really believe that your team is a cup contender year after year, and to see it have turned around so quickly from a pretty dark period can be a little bit of a jolt for everybody, the writers and the fans too. But it is something to enjoy, and I think even within the complaints, there's still a lot of people who will say, having said all that, it's very exciting, and it certainly is to watch. It's a team that when they go out on the ice, you expect them to win, and that hasn't been said about an Islander team in a long, long time.
And people now expecting them to make a deep playoff run. Last one for me just came to mind. I see all these people getting these Belmont tours. One, have you done one? And do you know where your press box will be?
When they build new buildings, they tend to sort of conveniently forget a proper press box sometimes.
That's where I was going.
I don't think it's sort of a euphemism, because you can't sell press box seats. So I certainly understand it from a business standpoint, but I'm, you know, I'll just be sad because the Coliseum is the best remaining press box in the league. It's such a great vantage point, even though it's a little bit tighter than some. So I'll definitely miss that. And I'll, you know, I haven't been to a game yet this season, but I don't think the media is going to be back up in the press box even through the playoffs when I do get back out there in a couple of weeks. But I haven't gotten my tour yet. We've been pretty locked down tight for the last year plus here. But I am looking forward to getting over to Belmont and seeing what it's like. And certainly the offer has been made, and hopefully during the summer when they're getting close to completion, I'll get over there. And it's great to be able to get all, you know, to have the live camera inside and see the updates. And I think that's another aspect that I think Islander fans have to get used to, that they're going to be going to games in the best building in the league. And that's something that they've never been able to say in 50 years of Islander hockey. So, you know, I think you don't have to become cocky, but you can certainly become confident that the owners know what they're doing, and the front office knows what it's doing, and the team is a good team that's playing in a great place. So that's all pretty new stuff, but it's good to get used to it.
And it'll be a lot warmer than Barclays Center, I predict.
maybe. There's not a lot of warm buildings left.
I almost wish that they have like a bar or some kind of food place in Belmont called Ironclad.
Yeah, it would
I'm not sure
be,
if I get that joke.
the ironclad lease from Barclays Center.
Oh, okay. Right. The 25-year right. lease. I got it. Yeah. Mm, well done. I think everyone wants to see Offside Tavern, though. That's where everyone's waiting
definitely,
for.
Yeah.
Well, Arthur, listen, appreciate it. Always generous with your time. Hopefully this is the last one you do for a little while. This is what happens when the team has too many off days following the trade deadline. But appreciate you. Appreciate all your great work. And we will talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
That was The Athletic's Arthur Staple. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to PT Isles, part of the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. All right, we're back. PT Isles, Noah Fogelman, and Joe Bono. Special thanks again to Arthur Staple for joining us. Back-to-back nights on the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network, and both interviews mentioned Christopher Gibson. So that's why you guys come here for the content, and we're very happy to give it to you.
Yeah, I don't know why before I said he was on St. Louis on Tampa. I don't know what made me think St. Louis.
That's blue.
Yeah, exactly. It was just the last week they had on NBC, they had Thomas Greiss versus Christopher Gibson matchup. So that was that was fantastic. But the sound, speaking of, like, you know, the Sound Tigers, and they're a disaster this year. But one positive was Alan Puring, who is the voice of the Bridgeport Sound Tigers, is calling a couple Islander games on the radio, because the radio voice of the Islanders, you know, Chris King, you know, is in the COVID, and we wish him well. And he's kind of filling in with Greg Picker, who normally does the color. Greg is really good at the play-by-play. And he's done that, you know, the last few games, and he's really solid at that. They had Islanders.com Corey Wright filling in a little bit as well on color, and Alan's filling in as well. So it's good that the AHL announcers get the call up as well.
That's a big thrill. That had to be a huge thrill for Alan, and tremendous experience. And you get your tape out there, and, you know, it just takes that one yes from one of these teams for things to open up. And, you know, Brendan was an AHL broadcaster and got the Islander gig when Howie Rose decided to retire. We are blessed to have Brendan Berg. I don't think maybe people do realize just how good he is. And for someone who has done play-by-play myself when I was over at Fordham and did some minor league baseball, I did arena league football, I did some stuff. He is so polished and so good. He never stammers, never stutters, a smooth, descriptive way of calling the game, the right moments, never reaches his peak too early in a game, has a sense for those big moments, and he works a crazy schedule. You know, because of now of how good he is, he's NBC obviously has recognized that and are bringing him on to the national broadcast. And, you know, if you follow along on his Instagram or Twitter, when he's not doing an Islander game, he's often, you know, doing another game for NBC or ESPN Plus or whatever it's going to be in the future. And, you know, I guess because of our COVID situation, he's been able just to go to a studio and pretty much do that on TV, which makes things a little bit easier from a travel standpoint, I'm sure. But that's a grueling schedule to be working game in and game out and be prepared and be as good as he is. And we are very lucky, because I think we're going to, you know, eventually, I think the Islander broadcaster will be the national voice of hockey. I think there's a good chance of that happening at some point during his long career.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And just, like, obviously the last, you know, 40 years of Islanders history, it's been a little uneven, so to speak, but one constant has been the Islanders play-by-play guys, going from Jigs McDonald to Howie Rose to Brendan Burke. I haven't lost one beat at all.
And John Sterling
exactly. You know, so I mean, it's like the last, you know, John, we all love John, but the last, you know, three guys have been fantastic. And couldn't be happier with Brendan Burke, who's been good to us on Lighthouse Hockey.
Other things I saw this week, someone tweeted out, he was looking through his camera roll and found a photo, because we just came off the anniversary of what people thought was going to be the last Islanders game, regular season game at the Coliseum, when they lost that regular season finale to the Columbus Blue Jackets in the shootout. They lost home ice. That was going to be the last regular season game at the Coliseum. They found a photo of Patrick Dowd, the sign guy, holding up one of his signs, and he says, "The old barn will stay open until the Isles win the cup." Yeah. And was this a prophecy? I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be the last game ever. They moved ironclad, like you just said, to Brooklyn, never to come back to the Coliseum. If they actually end up winning the cup, at the refurbished Coliseum, that sign, that picture.
Yeah. No, that's
pretty impressive. Yeah.
Now let's just, I mean, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but
let's get ahead. Let's get far ahead of ourselves.
Let's do it. Let's do it. They win the cup, right? Where's the parade? Is the parade down Hempstead or is it around the racetrack of Belmont?
Well, where the parade used to be Hempstead and then they did Eisenhower Park. Yeah. I mean, I'm too young.
Yeah. I think that's what it was.
I mean, would they even venture into the city? Is there any chance they would even?
Probably not.
That anymore. To, just because it's Rangers town, they couldn't even do anything.
I think if they still were in Brooklyn with the
Irons, they'd have to split it.
I think they probably would have had it in the Canyon of Heroes. Mm-hmm. So because if the Nets win this year,
the politicians would have pulled them into doing something like that. That I wouldn't want that. Yeah. I don't think Islander fan base is large enough to support that.
Right. They have multiple parades, you know, multiple arenas. I mean, who knows? But that's a good problem to worry about.
You know? Remember, the Devils used to have theirs in like the parking lot of the Meadowlands.
That was,
I mean, it's, you know, it's quintessential Jersey. But yeah. I mean, I don't know if I wanted Coliseum parking lot. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would enjoy that. You know, you did a tailgate party type of thing.
Yeah, I'll never forget.
I'm not sure. Certainly Hempstead. I think that's it. I think you do the slow caravan of cars down Hempstead. You got Borelli's there. They'll retake the same picture they took from 40 years ago. A lot of people will be there with their grandkids that said they were there back in the 80s. It'll be a you know the past meeting the present. It'd be pretty magical. Of course, you, again, not looking too far down the road, but we'll do that because that's what we're doing at the moment. You know, the idea of the Stanley Cup coming out and Andrews Lee's putting on his skates and walking out with his repaired ACL to get the cup from Gary Bettman. You know, he's got to hand it over to Andy Green and all the former Devils first.
Right, exactly.
before Josh Bailey gets his hands on it. To dream. But it's crazy. And Arthur was talking about it. It is crazy that we are talking about the Islanders as people now recognizing after they made these trades for Zajac and Palmieri, you know, they're the favorite to get out of the East.
Yeah.
You say that, that's people not going, okay, I can't see that. No, I think a lot of people actually would feel that they are the favorites that come out of the East because of what they did last year, because of the defense, because you know the goaltending is going to be there, because they can roll the four lines and how deep they are in the coach. And that every team has some flaws and warts. And I think any seven-game series with any of those three other teams, Boston, Pittsburgh, or Washington, is going to be a tough series. But, you know, I think if you polled general NHL media at this point, you may see, you know, a little room, I think, between the Islanders and the Capitals in terms of what they would think would be the favorite coming out of the division.
Yeah, I mean, because Islanders' goaltending is far better than the Caps. Their defense is much better. And, you know, after the two games against Boston, I think one against the Rangers and one against Philly, they played three straight against the Capitals. So that could be the division right there. You know, the Capitals dominated the Flyers Tuesday night, and the Islanders will have a game in hand. We'll catch up against the Bruins. But that could be the division right there, those three games in a row. And those are going to be nasty playoff games. We all know the type of players that the Capitals have, you know, looking right at you, Tom Wilson. And a couple, you know, others as well. So that also could be a game that you see a Braden Colburn with his size, you know, physicality. He might get into one of those games.
Yeah, and I think what Arthur said makes a lot of sense about getting him in the lineup because you just don't want his first game to be, you know, game seven of the conference finals. Right. Or Trent Hunter, he played his first games in the playoffs, right?
For the playoff goal,
2002? Yeah. Yep. And scored a playoff goal, right? His first ever goal in the NHL was a playoff goal.
Playoff goal, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's
happened before.
Yeah, it's definitely happened, yeah. But it's funny because like, you look, you know, Braden Colbert, 4 years ago, that would have been the only move the Islanders made on the trade deadline. Right. Typical Gratzinot move.
Or he would have been like a big offseason acquisition. He would have been like, you know, Brendan Witt, you know, free agent acquisition, you know, this rugged stay-at-home defenseman, 6'3", you know.
Exactly.
No, it's crazy where they were. You knew the Islanders from the time the Lee injury occurred that they were going to go for it. And that's also a commitment from ownership.
Right.
You know, they're paying this money out.
Yeah.
They're paying these guys, they're paying beyond, you know, what the Islanders can afford under the cap and what actually is being allocated to their roster are two different numbers. And they're making it, they're giving Lou the okay to go out and spend money when available. And just the fact that the Islanders organization is in that position
right.
is, you know, new ground. And now we're back-to-back years where they have gone out and not just gotten a player, they've gotten an impact player and a player that fits seamlessly in what they want to do and what they want to accomplish in the locker room and the style of play and the attitude. And, you know, I was interested, you know, on Twitter, you know, the Taylor Hall argument. And my thought was I would have been excited if they got Taylor Hall, because I think the upside potentially there, you know, you hit, you know, lightning in a bottle and he turns it on and he's excited to be there and it's a new environment and you capture, you know, two, 3 months of great hockey from Taylor Hall, you know, for a guy who's looking to get cash in on a big contract. Yeah. I would have been excited about it. But the Palmieri move was always the move that made the most sense for a variety of reasons, style to play, not exactly Anders Lee, but still a kind of in that power forward type mole, could score a scrappy goal like he did the other night. And the Zajac one is fascinating, but it just, the Zajac one really just the depth of the lineup now to where the players that were in the lineup each and every night that you go, oh, what line are they on? Oh, I can't believe they're playing here. Oh, they're putting Ross Johnson in. Oh, Leo's on the top line. Yeah. Now those guys are there as depth, and you'll only probably be seeing them, you know, if there's an injury or they look to give someone a night off.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Ross Johnson, he's on the IR, and so is Michael Del Cole. You might not see those guys, and even Kiefer Bellows, who Barry Trotz, you know, mentioned, thank God he wasn't traded, you know, which was kind of curious because the comments he said earlier in the year about Kiefer, you know, also got benched for a long time, but you see something in Kiefer, it's, you know, protects his guys as well, you know, criticizes, you know, the young guys as well, but there's depth now in the offense, defense, we know the goaltending, and moneypuck.com, who traditionally isn't always favorable to the Islanders, now have them at a 99% chance to make the playoffs, and you've never seen that before, and I think they even have them 16.9% to make the finals. So that's pretty solid. I think that's the second highest.
Probably the second highest probably ever.
Yeah, for the Islanders. Exactly. Yeah, so it's and Arthur made a good point because, you know, obviously you know who you would potentially play in the conference finals. You know, well, actually we knew it would be Tampa or whoever was coming out. This year we don't know because of the seeding. So they could conceivably play Vegas. They can play Colorado. They can play, you know, Florida, Toronto. Who knows? That's what makes it so exciting. You don't know which division you're going to play. So I don't know, just bank the points, whether they're pretty or not. Style points doesn't matter. 2 points, 2 points. Just, and if you can lose in overtime. Just get at least a point a game. Get the wins, bank them, and try to get, you know, second overall in the league. So you get home ice at least through the conference finals. Mm-hmm. You know, win the division. I want to see that Mass Mutual logo on a banner somewhere. That'd be fantastic. You know, that's the one thing they haven't slain in, I think, 1988.
Yeah, then if you win do that, you almost. Now, let me think about this, because I honestly don't know the answer to this. If you win a division and you haven't been a team that's won a Stanley Cup in a long time, right? So this isn't a team that's won banner after banner after banner and wins the division every year. But you win your first division in 30 some odd years, knowing it's Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz. Do you have a ceremony to raise the banner in your first home game?
No,
I think it just there. Just there.
I would just put it up.
Just put it. It's just up there.
Yeah, I would just put it up. I mean, because let's just say they win the division. It's a heartbreaking loss, Game 7 of the conference finals. You can have a ceremony to raise the. Division champion banner, just have it up there. It would be so much better.
So as a Met fan, I was there in opening day 2001, and I know they after losing the Subway Series to the Yankees, I know they had a ceremony and unveiled like the National League champion flag and gave out like the National League champion rings,
right?
You know, and you lost the World Series.
Yeah,
I think it's been just so long since any of my teams have won a division.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly. Like, you would think basketball, hockey, and baseball would kind of work that way, but I don't know about the unveiling of the banner. Other things going on. Ryan Strome keeps on putting up points, and Ranger fans keep on chirping, and that's okay. I'm all right. I'm happy that Ryan Strome has turned himself into a very serviceable NHL player that could put up points next to an Artemi Panarin. And I enjoy the back and forth between the Ranger fans about who's better with Barzal. And hopefully that goes on for quite a bit longer.
Yeah, and you'll have more playoff points this year, I presume. no, so, I mean, That's the argument right there. We all know Ryan Strome had a great first full season with the Islanders. I think he had like over 50 points. We thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, John Tavares' running mate. Didn't quite work out, but you know what? Got a Jordan Eberle. So it worked out pretty nicely. And, you know, Ryan Strome, best of luck on the Rangers. But, you know, you're playing with, you know, all-world talent and Artemi Panarin. So.
And Sunday night, Islanders on Ranger Islanders Rangers and WrestleMania. What was the situation at the Fogelman House when with those two events happening at the same time and simultaneously?
So we have, you know, we have a smart TV, you know, a Samsung, and Peacock is not available on Samsung smart TV.
I am well aware, very upset about
which
it.
Which is kind of, you know, bullshit. So I have an Apple TV in my bedroom, but I'm like, all right, I can access it through my Xbox. So we, you know, plugged in through the Xbox and we're watching it. It's like thinking to myself, 30 years ago when I'm playing the regular Nintendo, it never even occurred to me to watch TV through a video game console. So it's how far we've become. So I had it on the big screen and I was watching the audio on the phone. And yeah, it was pretty good. Some disappointing matches, I thought, or outcomes, I should say. But overall, it was pretty good for what they provided. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I was kind of upset that I had to actually try to concentrate on both. Yeah. I was like, why is there an Islander Ranger game on Sunday? If it's going to be an Islander game on a Sunday, it can't be, you know, Islanders and, you know, under normal times, it'd be like Islanders and, you know, Coyotes on a Sunday night at 5 o'clock. You know, this was 7 o'clock start on a Sunday. WrestleMania's on.
Yeah.
My situation was different. I had, you know, my daughter, she wants to watch what she wants. She goes, I want to watch my show. She's in one of those modes, right? I can't, if I turn on something, she goes, no, I want to watch my show. So she got her show on the actual TV. I had a laptop going with WrestleMania on Peacock and then my phone on the MSG Go app. And, you know, that's, you know, that's modern day entertainment, I guess, for you having three separate things going on and trying to concentrate on all of them.
Right. It's amazing now how, technology works. But what was your favorite match?
I actually really liked the Saturday night Sasha Banks Bianca Belair match. I actually had my wife watch it the next morning. What? I'm like, hey, can you do me a favor? Like, you have like 17 minutes. Yeah. I'm like, you should really, this was really good. I think you'll enjoy this. I thought the Saturday night show was more entertaining than Sunday. I thought the Sunday card was a little bit lackluster. You know, I'm not like a uber mega wrestling fan. You know, certainly there are people that you come across in your life at work and other things that if you talk any wrestling, they look at you weird, like you're into that. People watch that stuff. Like, I'm not like the super crazy fan, but I have been to my fair share of WrestleManias. You know, I was at WrestleMania 20 at the Garden. I was at 29 at MetLife. I was at 35 at MetLife, but then I was also at 32 in Texas for my brother's bachelor party, and then we went a couple years later to New Orleans. So I've been to five manias. That's pretty up. That's good there. Five out of 37.
Yeah, my daughter got into it last year, and she's been bugging me about, oh, can we go to WrestleMania or can we go to SummerSlam? I'm like, first of all, we got to allow fans to come back. Second of all, we got to hope it's in the area, you know. And you know, unfortunately, they had it in MetLife years ago, so I don't think it's going to be here for a while. You might get a pay per view around the area. Yeah. But, you know, me in Connecticut, you can go to Jersey, you can go to New York, Philly, you can go to
and it's Boston. Not like the old days. Like, if you go back and watch, like, WrestleMania 11, that's the one where Lawrence Taylor is in the main event against Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yes.
You'll have, you know, it's like, live from the Hartford Civic Center. Yeah. Like, no, those days are over. They're not having WrestleMania at the Hartford Civic Center.
Exactly. And when you mentioned Lawrence Taylor, and you always had those celebrity matches that were never really panned out, but they had Bad Bunny. And absolutely fantastic, that match. I mean I never heard of him before. I think Royal Rumble,
same here.
He was singing and now he's everywhere, winning Grammys, he was on SNL, but like, apparently he was training for months at the Performance Center. And
no, I take it seriously.
He was absolutely fantastic. He beat The Miz and John Morrison, and so it's, if you haven't seen that match, go watch it. It's pretty entertaining. And like you said, the Sasha Banks Bianca Belair match was great. My daughter was upset.
A little bit more entertaining than Matt Martin and Zdeno Chara from a little couple of weeks ago. A little bit of a match, but good to see that rematch occur. Apparently Chara kind of challenged Martin and he dropped the gloves and was game for it, even though he knows that the reach pretty puts him at a pretty distinct disadvantage. And now he's a family man. He's got a daughter at home.
Exactly.
And he's still taking on Zdeno Chara. So
I know.
Anyway, Noel.
Yeah.
Exciting times. Islanders. Anyone that was nervous about this team weeks ago, because there were some of them out there, they were looking at the standings. Oh, the Flyers can catch up and be 6 points out. And what are they going to do? As we said, be patient, be confident, and that the team that you were seeing on the ice at that day was not going to be the team they were going to be rolling into the playoffs with. We now know what that team looks like. And now they have 14 games to get the lines the way they wanted, to get these guys acclimated the way they wanted, hopefully stay healthy and be ready moving into the playoffs. So exciting times ahead, but some difficult games ahead as well. Coming up next for the Islanders, they have back-to-back games with Taylor Hall and the Boston Bruins up in Boston. Then they're in Philadelphia against the Flyers before getting back to the Coliseum and welcoming back the New York Rangers. Special thanks again to Arthur Staple for joining us. For Noel Fogelman, I am Joe Bono. We will talk to you next week, Islanders Country. Good night.